Hello, Matt.
Hey, Bill.
Special midnight edition.
That's
the
right.
Week in Blog. We're actually recording an hour or less than an hour before the final Republican debate. So sadly, you will not get our wisdom following that debate. This might already be obsolete before it's uploaded, but we'll do our best to keep it interesting. So be that as it may, we don't know the final twists and turns. It seems like a big splash was made by not a blog, but online, by an old conservative stand by the National Review saying, don't pick Newt. They didn't quite say who to vote for, but they urged conservatives to not rally behind Newt, which I thought was sort of strange because Rich Lowry had a piece, I think only a month ago, saying, kind of saying, yay Newt, that sort of good Newt's back. And I take it some conservative bloggers are not following their lead.
That's right. A lot of factors at play here. Of course, National Review is the conservative magazine, highly influential, probably not as influential as it once was, but of course started by William F. Buckley. And they came out and they actually bashed Newt Gingrich, really went after him. I think the title on the website was Against Newt. But then they ended up actually saying that not only was Newt Gingrich disqualified, but that also Rick Perry and I believe Michelle Bachmann are candidates who do not deserve your consideration. But they said that candidates who do deserve your consideration are Mitt Romney, John Huntsman, and Rick Santorum, which a lot of people thought was flatly absurd for a variety of reasons. But as you mentioned, Bill, there has been...
But what is their reasoning? Can you sum it up?
Well, it's hard to sum up something that doesn't make a lot of sense. Last time, they endorsed Mitt Romney, and I think that they like Mitt Romney, clearly, and I don't know why they just don't go forward and endorse him this time. Clearly, my take, at least, is that this is... the two people who could potentially stop Mitt Romney, I don't mean win Iowa or even New Hampshire, I mean actually potentially stop the juggernaut that is Mitt Romney, are Newt Gingrich and Rick Perry. They have the experience and the resources to do so. And, of course, those are two candidates that National Review says don't consider.
So is the review basically is the subtext, we think these guys can win the other guys can't? Or are they trying to make an argument that Romney, Huntsman, Santorum are the real conservatives – and these other folks are not real conservatives?
I think that primarily the piece primarily says that Newt Gingrich is a loose cannon, that he cannot be trusted in terms of his temperament, that if Republicans want to beat Barack Obama, that Mitt Romney essentially is the right guy. But certainly Newt Gingrich isn't, because he says zany things. He is a loose cannon. He has three wives, so he should be – that's essentially their argument. This got immense pushback in the blogosphere. Hot Air wrote about it. Red State's Ben Domenech, one of the co-founders of Red State, wrote something that Eric Erickson actually posted at Red State. And he said, National Review, they lived long enough for us to see them become the villain. This is a line taken from Batman, from the Heath Ledger Batman movie.
Not the Michael Keaton version.
I'm sorry?
Not the Michael Keaton Batman.
No. The Dark Knight, right? So that's pretty heavy. National Review, they live long enough for us to see them become the villain. I mean, here you have essentially grassroots conservatives turning on National Review and saying that they're basically the establishment, that they've gone over to the dark side. Brent Bozell, who is a conservative leader, he heads the Parents TV Council, he heads the Media Research Center. His father ghost wrote Barry Goldwater's Conscience of a Conservative, and Brent Bozell's uncle was William F. Buckley. And Bozell today, this is a conservative leader, takes to his Facebook page. You can find it on the Daily Caller. But he takes to his Facebook page and he says, National Review's endorsement of Romney and Huntsman proves only that this is no longer the magazine of William F. Buckley Jr. He goes on to add, my uncle would be appalled.
Now, it seems to me, and you know, correct me if you think I'm not on target, but I felt that in 2008, actually, I did an NPR interview early in the race after Obama won Iowa, and I said, whoever, since he won Iowa, either whoever's going to win Iowa is going to coast the rest of the way because there's no big difference between Obama and Clinton and Edwards on policy, and whoever gets the initial momentum, everyone will close ranks around that person, and that will be that. And obviously that was wildly wrong, pundifying on my part. And what happened was that all these sorts of fault lines and divisions and factions that had not been pushed up to the surface in a long time, we saw in stark relief over the course of several months. And, you know, as a Democrat, that was sort of a painful process to go through, to realize that your party's even more divided than you ever thought. Are we on the verge of a similar thing happening in the Republican Party and the conservative movement? Because the divisions between these various candidates are not cleanly, center versus right. There's all sorts of mixed up things involved. There's all sorts of demographic differences going on within the party itself. And now you're seeing sort of strange camps being formed because this kind of intra-party fight hasn't happened in so long.
Wow, there's a lot there. A lot of stuff there. I'll go through a couple of thoughts quickly. First of all, it's funny, you know, conservatives advocate this Joseph Schumpeter model of economics, which is creative destruction, right? So if an industry fails and people lose their jobs and go out of business, that's fine because in the long run, the country moves forward. There used to be a guy who delivered milk, right, who showed up at your door with bottles of milk. That guy lost his job, but it's good that he did because life moves on, and now that guy is programming computers or whatever, presumably. And yet conservatives sometimes want to avoid these primary fights and these ideological fights, and I would argue that it's good that candidates fail and that ideas are challenged. You know, if the grand poobahs had gotten together 6 months ago, they might have decided, let's just ordain Rick Perry. He's a governor. He's good looking. He's got money. It would have been a disaster, right? Because, I mean, if Perry ends up losing, then, you know, if Perry does end up losing the primary, then they would have obviously picked a flawed candidate. And even if Perry somehow miraculously ends up winning the primary, they would have deprived him from going through this difficult journey where he made mistakes and grew. And by the way, if you look at the last debate, at least, I don't know how tonight's debate is going to go, but the last debate, the candidates were much better. And I think it's because now they've been through like a dozen debates. So that's one factor. I think right now there is a cleavage happening. We see it right now between National Review and, say, like conservative writers and bloggers and talk radio folks. This has sort of always been there. It's getting weirder because, like, it used to be that you had the National Review people who were sort of august and revered. They worked for Buckley's Magazine. And then you had the lowly people, say, like me, who were bloggers at townhall.com. I mean, I feel like that differential in terms of our status has evened out because now they're blogging too. They've humbled themselves and they're on Twitter too. So the status, we're sort of leveling out in terms of status, and yet they tend to maintain this Brahmin sort of style of this patrician conservatism, which favors people like Romney and doesn't deign to entertain the hoi polloi, the lumpen proletariat like Newt Gingrich. So that's a factor. I do think the interesting thing, Bill, that's going to happen is I think that we are at the end of what I would call like the Reagan era, and we are going into a new conservatism where you're going to have like cosmopolitan conservatives who are – like right now what we have are basically – you've got two things. You've got like – kind of charismatic urban candidates, and I use that term loosely, but I'm talking about like people like Gingrich, Romney, and Huntsman, who might appeal to sort of urbanites, but they have questionable conservative credentials, And then you've got the sort of old, like, kind of Texans like Rick Perry, who have that swagger and that Southern thing that's so 1990s and it's so out of vogue now. I think in starting in the next election cycle, you're going to have people like Paul Ryan and Chris Christie and Marco Rubio and Susana Martinez and Nikki Haley. You're going to have young conservatives. In most cases, these are bona fide conservatives. So ideologically, they're solidly conservative, but they will have much more appeal to the college-educated urbanites. So I think that, like, right now we're sort of at the end of an era, and frankly, we're sort of making a Xerox of a Xerox. You know, we're a copy of a copy of a copy of a copy of a cassette.
Right, 'cause it seems like the field in general, none of the people that you – all the sort of young Turks that you've named, none of them are running right now.
No, none of them are running. Right. The Republican Party is in a weird position. In a way, it's an enviable position because they have a very strong bench. And yet, I would say a weak field right now.
Now, the only person, I think, in the current field that you might argue is at least offering a 21st century brand of conservatism would be Huntsman. And for a while, he was being treated by conservatives as – the leper, because he was talking about, you know, global warming is real and we should embrace some degree of gay rights and things like that. And now it seems like Huntsman's stressing his conservative positions more and getting some appreciation for it by folks like George Will and Eric Erickson and National Review. So
right.
Is there and now in the latest New Hampshire poll, he was posting a decent third place, which is better than anything else he's done nationally. Is there any thought that he is offering a kind of wave of the conservative future, or is that still not being taken seriously in most conservative circles?
So, first of all, let me just say about I like Eric Erickson a lot. But by the way, I think some of his praising of Huntsman has been overplayed by other people who want to promote Huntsman. But it is important to remember, Bill, I think we talked about it here, that Eric at one point said that John Huntsman wasn't just a bad Republican, but was disloyal to America because ostensibly he started running for president while he was started plotting to run for president against Obama while he was still serving as his ambassador, and that he was disloyal to the – I thought that was overwrought, and I said so at the time. I wrote that was – a bridge too far,
right.
But if you ever believe that somebody was a disloyal American, you can't all of a sudden decide that they're worthy to be your party's nominee. So either he was,
I think Eric Erickson is some sort of unreliable leader.
He may have flip-flopped on John Huntsman. That's all I'll say. So anyway, here's the problem with Huntsman, and this speaks to my point I was making earlier. John Huntsman doesn't feel like a Republican. Neither does Mitt Romney, okay?
Huntsman's sort of being open about that. He's suggesting that he's running as a sort of a different kind of Republican.
It's different.
That's his whole
shtick. This isn't about ideas or ideology.
Right.
Marco Rubio is a different kind of Republican, and he can talk – Marco Rubio could say – and Newt Gingrich even says, look, I think that there's climate change. I think it's possible that some of it's man-made. But Newt feels like a Republican. Huntsman doesn't. And so it's funny, I was doing an MSNBC show the other week, and I'm on set, and the host, who obviously isn't a conservative, says, I don't know why people, you know, Huntsman, I don't know why Republicans don't support Huntsman. He seems like obviously the best conservative. And it's like, you would say that, because this is like, I hate to be like, well, you don't know, but like, trust me. Republicans, there's a feel to it. There's a vibe, so I just don't think. I mean, he could win New Hampshire, maybe, because I think that sometimes they're contrarian and unpredictable. Right. But
Romney would have to tank, and Huntsman pulling a lot of independents, probably. But.
Yeah, but I don't think, and it's not just about the issues. It's stylistic, it's temperamental. I can't even really quantify it. It's like pornography.
Can I
know it when I see
it. Can I just say to you that that's not necessarily nice? Just from my outside the conservative perspective, it feels to me like, you know, Newt Gingrich comes across like a jerk. And Huntsman comes across like a normal, nice guy. But you see conservatives respond to Newt because he's generally hectoring people. And that somehow means that if he strays from the party line sometimes, you still trust him as an authentic conservative. I mean, if to the extent that that's true, I mean, you want to reject the entire premise because it's not a nice premise.
So I think I will say, I mean, first of all, I think we could probably concede there, it's somewhat of a Rorschach test. I mean, if a candidate is really pushing your buttons, like a turn on politically to you, then the odds are that they're rubbing me the wrong way and vice versa. And that's probably as it should be. I will push back a little bit on the thing about Newt. There is this meme that Gingrich is popular because he attacks Obama and because he's mean. And I mean, yes, he can attack. There's no doubt about that. And in some ways that's a plus, but Gingrich talks about brain science and about space exploration and sort of proactive. You know, he said, look, if you've been here for 25 years and you're a grandfather, I'm not gonna send you back to El Salvador. I mean, my point is, like, he actually has taken, in some cases, courageous stands, unpopular. And also, space exploration is a great example. I mean, Ronald Reagan, go back and read the Challenger, you know, the disaster speech, how he talks about exploration and how this is a you know, ever since Americans started moving westward, this is in the American spirit. I mean, nowadays some conservatives poo-poo that as utopian. He does embrace ideas. He does challenge people, I think, to their better angels in a way.
Well, let's not go back and forth too much on the Zen of Newt. But let's shift gears completely, because I know we have to wrap up before the debate starts. We don't want to miss the grand finale.
And by the way, I'm willing to bet that our conversation so far today, Bill, even though we're ending it a little bit premature compared to normal, I think that we've probably spurred thought and discussion in the comments section, at least.
I agree.
Okay.
I agree. I await and expect quality comments. In non-Republican primary news, in blogging news,
yes,
Ben Smith, who kind of invented a brand of political blogging for Politico, and recently have been openly musing that the blog is dead and the medium of blogging is dead, and what's he going to do with himself now? And he even tried to repurpose the blog that he had to move away from the blow-by-blow of the political scene and focusing on the intersection of media and politics. A couple months after doing that, he announces he's going to basically leave Politico almost entirely to become the editor-in-chief of BuzzFeed. And I'm having a hard time explaining what BuzzFeed is.
Yeah, if you know, you tell me.
But the idea of it, from what I understand, and it's run by Jonah Peretti, who was one of the folks behind the scenes at the Huffington Post at its founding, and I happen to know he was involved in all sorts of smaller stunts and schemes that, you know, went viral before there was a term go viral. So that's kind of been his market niche. And the idea behind this BuzzFeed thing is somehow that it's going to make it easier. And forgive me, BuzzFeed people, if I'm totally botching the explanation, because I'm doing my best.
It's not like we talk about blogging. It's not like we talk about blogging here on this show,
right,
or we're any sort of tech.
This is not blogging. This is about sharing. It's about sharing media. So it's some kind of news aggregation site that the crux of it is finding stories you want to share with your friends. And that's a different thing than Drudge or Huffington Post type of aggregation where you're just sort of looking at it. I mean, obviously, Huffington Post has ways that you can share, but BuzzFeed is somehow sort of the next step in sharing. I'm having a hard time explaining because I don't totally get it. It's certainly a big shift from what Ben Smith was doing. And Jonah told the Washington Post that the idea of bringing Ben Smith on is to kind of elevate BuzzFeed's initial offerings, which is sort of more of the lowbrow type of sharing, here's a cute, you know, cat video, and fuse it with more high-minded journalism that you want to share. And he was suggesting that, you know, people
like,
want to share all
sorts of
different
things. I mean, not to interrupt you, Bill, but the top story.
Go ahead and interrupt.
Right now the story is unbelievable Brett threatens to kill Santa. That is the top story.
Right.
Yeah,
right.
10 failed celeb endorsements.
Right.
Here's a good one. The internet's 10 best Ron Swanson tributes.
Well, I would share that.
Huge Ron Swanson fan, but you know.
But so the idea of bringing Brent Smith on is to somehow expand what BuzzFeed does beyond those sorts of links. And so there'd be, you know, deeper long form journalism that people would also want to share.
Yeah. Do we know, is he writing or is he just, he's the editor in chief. So right. We can probably assume he got he's getting a pay increase presumably to do this. Do you know if he's going to be writing or if he's...
Yeah, I mean, that's my understanding is that he's going to be writing and, essentially offering a kind of long-form journalism and
also, like, curating
other... the proposition that that is shareable, that can go viral in the same way that Ron Swanson tributes can go viral. And that's a proposition that I would think, as of this point, is fairly unproven. Perhaps I've certainly seen articles that have gone viral, but they're not really investigative journalism type articles. They might be more like ideological diatribe type articles. Even though they may be long, since they hit a certain nerve on the left or the right, they get passed around. You still haven't really seen that with investigative journalism.
Now there is an interesting hybrid that can be reached. I'll give you an example. A couple stories right now on the Daily Caller, where I write. Huntsman's Daughters open up to GQ. We've also got Wiener Porn Star Friend doesn't like anti-piracy legislation. So those are two that I think are sort of a hybrid entertainment slash with a political twist on it.
Right.
So, but
the stuff that you guys have done that have really broken out have tended to be kind of, you know, scandal type reporting, right?
Well, I would say the journalist thing is a little bit. I mean, that's serious, media bias, but there's a scandal element. Believe it or not, our biggest story of the entire year was about SEAL Team 6 and a book written by a SEAL. I was actually very pleasantly surprised that had the most traffic of anything we wrote this year. There was the Bachman headache, Bachman having these headaches. There was a lot of stuff on Eric Holder, about the Operation Fast and Furious, which is a very substantive and serious story, congressman calling for his resignation and such. Obviously, like anything else, you have to, combine serious punditry with a little salesmanship. Let me talk about Ben Smith a little bit, because it is interesting. I mean, he is really, really good at what he does and
what he did.
What he did. And Politico.
I'm not sure what he's going to do now.
I mean, Politico is a very good outlet. I mean, very good at what they do. Ben obviously worked very long hours there, but you got the sense that, unlike some people, he just did it because he's like a political junkie. It seemed like he could pretty much do what he wanted to do. He sort of had free rein to write about topics that interested him. So it is interesting to me that he is leaving it, just because he seemed like a good fit and he seemed to be.
And he got to roam where he wanted to roam.
And he was at the top of his game. I think he works from home basically in New York. Mm-hmm. He doesn't go into the Roslyn, Virginia office. So, I was surprised. And there's another story, interestingly, that was broken, at least as far as I know, by Ben Smith, that Mark Ambender, who was a blog kind of pioneer. He did the Hotline blog at National Journal. Then he really made a name for himself at the Atlantic blogging. He gave that up at some point to write more like long form things and to cover national security issues. And now he has apparently walked away from that. What do you know about that, Bill?
I don't have any inside knowledge about it.
More than I do, probably.
But my sense of it is, not knowing specifically what his next plans are, just the sort of the tone of the statement that was made by the National Journal, it seems like more of a case of burnout. I'm not saying that in a negative way. It's a normal, a human condition. I mean, both Ben Smith and Mark Amender, and Ben mentioned this in his own post about it, were sort of on somewhat similar tracks, pioneers in reported blogging, and they both were functioning on real breakneck speeds for a long time. And with Mark, when he shifted back to the National Journal, said openly that he was kind of tired of being on that treadmill, want to be able to take a bigger view of things, and I assume this step is an extension of that. So it does sort of raise the question here. And Ben going to BuzzFeed also just might be a similar type of burnout, other than going ahead. BuzzFeed is not going to be a relaxing gig, yeah. I imagine. But perhaps with both of them, there's a limit to how much of this you can do before you drive yourself a little mad.
Look, first of all, I think the interesting story is you have two people who were at the top of their game, highly regarded, who essentially walked away from it, at least temporarily. That doesn't happen much in life. I got to say, man, the more I start to – I think I've got this thing – I don't want to say figured out because life is a journey, and you get better and you learn and you adjust as you go. But I feel like I pace myself better than some of my contemporaries. I'm not saying they're burnout. I'm not saying that's what it was. Could be a great opportunity. BuzzFeed could be the next big thing, and he could be he could have cut a deal where he gets shares and he ends up being a multimillionaire. But I do think it is possible that there is some burnout with blogging. And I think you've got to – there's the thing where you cover things and you tweet and you know what's going on and you do TV. And then there's the thing – but at some point you turn the computer off and you're willing to not cover a story. And it's very important in life to have balance. It's very – I mean, there are days that I walk out of the office at 5 o'clock and go home. And sometimes something happens. I end up getting on the computer and tweeting or I'm watching TV and I'm tweeting, but it's I've always felt, and again, I'm not saying that these guys burned out because they overworked, but I do think you have to make a conscious effort to find balance in your life. And I think it's seductive as a blogger because it's like the thing, if you get 3 hours sleep a night, there's another guy who only got two. There's always going to be somebody who could potentially outwork you and get that story because they're up. So I've tried.
I think there's a issue to be raised with new media companies. They're trying to always stay ahead of the curve, and they're trying to constantly reinvent themselves and try different things to stay fresh. That in chasing these utopian goals, you're going to run the risk of driving out your best people.
Yeah.
I would not think any media organization would want to lose a Ben Smith or a Mark Amender if they didn't have to.
Right. And again, we don't know that's what happened.
Right.
And I think some of these people, a lot of them are driven themselves. It's not, it may not be that the institution where they work is exerting overt pressure to work crazy hours, but you do feel it whether or not it's spoken. There is a pressure that could be sort of internal. Just that if you don't write that story, that someone else is. And
right.
you may not get fired tomorrow, but over time you will, you go down the pecking order.
Right. And I mean, I think there's always sort of a general attitude that, you know, always push your employees because you can always squeeze a little bit more out of them, and someone else is always going to be able to do the job better. So there's no harm in constant pushing. But if you can push, you know, people who were extremely prolific in a high quality way in Ben Smith and Mark Amender, and you know, there might just be some limits of human capacity,
right,
in this sort of field.
Part of the way I've tried to position myself is that at least psychologically I can tell myself that a couple things. One, when you look at my Twitter feed and I'm following, I have a list. Everyone should follow it, actually. It's very good. There's like 150 political journalists. And if I look at it and if Jonathan Martin gets a story, I feel bad. Like, I can't believe Jonathan Martin, you know, it's like Schadenfreude. Well, it's not Schadenfreude. It's the opposite of that. But it's like Mattenfreude. It's where you feel bad at yourself when someone else does well. It's like right. Guilt. It's guilt, but it's a certain weird narcissism. But the thing is, you don't think about like, well, Ben Smith didn't break that story, and Mark Amender didn't break that. You don't think of all the people. Jake Tapper didn't break that. It's like the one guy who did, and why didn't you? And it's a self-imposed thing. But for me, I felt like because I do TV and I do opinion and I do inside reporting. So for me, I feel like by diversifying, it's sort of taken a little bit of the pressure off, because if someone else is getting more, you know, leaks or breaking more news, I can always at least assure myself, yeah, but I was on TV yesterday. this is, by the way, very pathetic. I realize that this is like starving for attention. But it's also like a fact of life that if you're doing that, you might keep your job because your boss right. says, well, he was on TV. Even though he hasn't broken a story, he's getting our name out there. Right. And if I am not breaking news or getting any scoops, at least it could be like, well, but I did write that good opinion piece yesterday. So but for these guys who just compete over over breaking news, it's dog eat dog.
Well, Matt, I believe the grand finale is starting.
Yes, I'm sorry for occupying, dominating the past 5 minutes there.
I think that's quite all right. It's an appropriate end to a high-quality episode.
Thank you for accommodating me tonight. I apologize for the changes.
We'll talk soon. Hopefully before the new year. I'm not quite sure what the holiday schedule will bring, but if I don't talk to you, have a wonderful holiday season.
You too, my friend. Always.
Thank you for your Christmas card, by the way. It was a wonderful Christmas card.
Oh, thank you. I wish I had one to hold up. It was a nice card. Nobody has noticed this yet, but it's modeled. The funny thing is it kind of looks a little bit like the new Nancy Pelosi picture with her on the couch. It's actually modeled after a very famous Avedon photo of Jack and Jackie Kennedy.
I did not know.
Check it out. Look it up and you'll see. I think Avedon's the name of the photographer. You'll see the picture. It's a famous black and white picture. And we sort of did. It's our version of it. It's not like a spoof. But that inspired our Christmas card this year.
Gotcha. All right. Gotcha. Excellent.
Thanks, man.
Thank you. And we'll catch you next week on The Week in Blog. Take care.